Okay. Hopefully my voice will stay. It was much stronger, but then I got
Certainly.
roped into a philosophical conversation, and you know what that can do to my voice. When, especially when certain people may or may not be involved in the conversation. Okay. So if you remember the end of the last sugya, just to reread those lines, where we came up with a beautiful line that is going to take us a few days to unpack, and it's so important that I was extra nice to you in terms of what I put on these source sheets. And the Gemara said as follows: remember, we said that the women are believed. Why are they believed? Because it is dirabanan. Bedikat chametz dirabanan, and the Gemara says why. Why is bedikat chametz midirabanan? Isn't owning chametz an iser d'oraita? And the Gemara says, yes, owning chametz would be aser midoraita, but midoraita bebitul ba'alma sagile.
But really, isn't the Torah
one second? But midoraita, you could solve the problem of balei ra, balei matze, with the magic. The magic we call bitul chametz. Now, bitul chametz, one second, give me a second. You will understand soon, is, according, in the eyes of the Rishonim, basically magical. They don't really understand what it is, and that's why they struggle so much. It is one of these questions that animated them. I ended up having mercy on you and didn't give you the piece in the Magen Avot. But the Magen Avot of the Meiri has these discussions of questions he was just dealing with, these treatises that he was answering, and one of them is on Bedikat Chametz, because he's just so shocked and enamored but with what is going on in this sugya. So what I want to do is talk about what Bedikat Chametz is. How does it solve the problems of owning chametz, which we will talk about what they are. That is going to be our goal. It will take us a few days. I try to limit myself to the key Gemaros and key Rishonim, but that is going to be our goal. Okay? Yes, Ma, what is your question?
I was going to ask, could you sit over here?
What? And I what? You can't hear me? Does that help? Can you not hear me? It doesn't matter. You can't whisper, anyways. Yeah, whispering is worse for your voice. Whispering, right? You have to talk, anyways. And besides, when you talk like this, you don't talk from your throat. You talk from your diaphragm, so it doesn't make any difference. Oh, yeah, no, my voice may not be sore from being sick, but from, you know, yelling. Bemoaning the state of the world, things like that. Yeah, the classics. Yep, definitely classics. Wonderful. Okay, so let us remind ourselves. I even put a note in for Mordechai. I hope he caught it. There you go. Good. Oh, good, good, good. So remind me. There are two psukim that most pointedly capture the problems with having chametz in your possession, whatever that is. What are those? Psukim? Yes, the psukim you have in front of you. Yes, what are they? Someone tell me. Thank you. What do they say? Oh, yes, that would be great. Whatever floats your boat. You know, psukim, I would say, the original would be great.
Okay. I'm very slow reading.
That's fine.
The hint to that Greek word. She asked Yomim Seur Lo Yimatse Biva Hechem Ki Kol Ochel Machmeitzes Vini Ritsa Hanefesh Haki
Very good. So the first pasuk tells us that
chametz lo yimatzei bevateichem, shall not be found in your home. Yes, yes, because you shall not eat. But let's just focus for a second on the fact that thou shalt not find chametz in thy proper... What? Yes. Oh, that's for sure true. Eating is worse. Mm-hmm. Eating is a separate prohibition. That's true. If oh, yes, the second half of the pasuk is if you eat it, we shall cut off your soul from the Jewish people. No, no, that's what Karet is. V'nichreta. Thou shalt be cut off. Yes, but this is Karet. Yep. Yep. Yeah, so it has to be the right shear, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you haven't, you know, look, amongst the crimes for which you shall be cut off from the Jewish people are like, you know, not having a Brit Milah and having a sandwich on Pesach.
Oh, my God.
What? What? Yeah, no, you eat the HR on Pesach. It's terrible. What?
That's right, Yom Kippur also. Yes. So if on Yom Kippur you decide, and on Yom Kippur it doesn't even have to be a sandwich. On Yom Kippur, if you have, no, that not that small. It has to be kukusevet agasa.
If you just have the lettuce inside the sandwich, so you're eating a lettuce sandwich.
No, no, but it could be. It doesn't even have to be chametz. You could have chocolate. You know, you could give up your connection to the Jewish people for I don't know, for a Crembo. Is it worth it? Was it worth it?
Crembo, no.
I know, right? For a Crembo, you're giving up your connection to the Jewish people? Pascal's made you very good, yes. That's a very good question. Not doing
it. You know what? After weighing the options, I really think.
Yeah, the Crembo. Eternal. Yes, okay. You're like, that's what Abby's asking. Oh, well, Pascal's wager. So you got to figure out what exactly am I wagering here? How bad is it to be cut off? I mean, cut off, you mean like I don't have to deal with the annoying people for the rest of eternity? I mean, you know, that's not, I don't know, the punishment. Is that what it means? I don't know. Yishlatan. Okay. Very good. So what? So what? What's the other pasuk? Mordechai, why don't you take the other pasuk?
Matot Yechel as Shivas Hayimim.
Yeah.
Is that two separate Yisurim? No leavened bread shall be found with you, and no leaven shall be found in all your territory? Or is that...
It says it. Two different words, for sure. Okay? So the first pasuk tells you, don't find leaven. The second one says...
Throughout the 7 days, unleavened bread shall be eaten.
Yes, I mean, the first pasuk, the second half of it, focuses on not eating chametz. The second pasuk focuses on eating matzah. Very good. And then, right here it says, you shall not see sa'or or chametz, right? Okay. Besides the fact that one of them says yimatzei and one says yira'eh, right, find and see, there's another very, 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 very important word in the second pasuk that I want to draw your attention to. It's a very important word. Very.
Gedulacha.
What?
Gedulacha.
Lecha, thank you. Lecha. It's a very important word. It's missing the first one. What does lecha mean? To you. But yes. I mean, yeah, it designates that it's yours. Correct. It's, right, it designates that it's yours. Okay. One second. Okay. So now, before we ask the question, before we go to the Rishon, and I ask you the following, okay? Fact. In addition to the problem of eating chametz, for which you lose your connection to the Jewish people, karet, whatever that means, maybe we'll take a day this year and say, what is this thing we call karet? Maybe we'll do that later in the year. It's a huge machloka. Shocking, I know. I know. Machloka, wild. Wild, I know. But given, in addition to the prohibition to eat chametz, there is a some series of prohibitions
of, let's be vague here, having or owning or relating to chametz, right? Some, right, collective of prohibitions. Yes? We'll be careful in the words here. Yes? We'll be careful. We'll be careful for the moment, right? Whether we call it ownership, whether we call it association, whether we call it identification with, whether we call it connection. I don't know, whatever vague words you would like to come up with. Any other good ones before I move on? Affiliation, what? Seeing, sure. You want to use the word of the buzzer. The seeing of chametz, the finding of chametz.
Experiencing.
The experiencing of chametz. The what? The having chametz being seenness. Yes, all these very precise categories. Very good. There is that thing called that. Very precise, right? That thing called that. Mm. I know, we're being very precise here. That thing called that. We're good. About chametz. Yes? And I ask you. You, Rabbi Kelman, because you're so frumpy, and we're going to give you the honorific now. You want to make sure that you avoid violating these prohibitions, whatever they mean. Of course, of course. And I asked you, okay, what do you need to do? Not the physical act, but what do you need to do? In what ways can you ensure that you avoid these prohibitions? What types of things could you do? What would you say? And how, what? So good. So, Eitan says, well, I don't know. If I took it literally, if the problem was seeing chametz, which Kobe will say, lo yera'e, it shall not be seen. It's the ability to being seenness, right? That's different than seeing. But sure, if you want to take it literally, don't see chametz. Eitan says, well, I could put on a blindfold. That would be much easier than cleaning for chametz and getting rid of it. I will just blindfold myself, right? It's, I am going to pretend I'm an infant with a problem with object permanence. Chametz here, chametz gone! Chametz here, chametz gone! Yay! Right? What? That's what I just said. I said an infant without object permanence, right? So this is halachic lack of object permanence. So Eitan says, well, what do you mean? It's not here, I can't see it, right? See no chametz, hear no chametz, you know? Yes.
Or I could just do bedikah everywhere where I would see something during Pesach.
And therefore,
if I'm sure, if I don't see anything now, I'm not going to see anything later.
Okay, good, right? So I could continue the seeing model and say the problem is maybe seeing doesn't mean don't see chametz. Maybe seeing means a little bit more ambitious, which is make sure that I don't see chametz. So maybe what that means, Rabbi Kelman will say, aha, what it means is, I understand. I can't just pretend I don't have object permanence. I do. But what I can do is I can search everywhere. And if in all the places I would normally search on Pesach, I search before Pesach, then I will not see. Chametz, maybe all it means is it shall not be seen, meaning in all the places you might see, don't see it. So like, if there's that one corner of my house that I never check because I know that it's haunted by a ghost. I'm telling you, there's a ghost in that corner. I just don't go into that corner of that closet because the ghost of the previous owner's cat lives there. I'm telling you. Yes, in that corner. So maybe that ghost eats Oreos, the same stale Oreos, because the staleness reminds that cat of what it was like to be alive. I don't know. What? It's a dead cat. Yeah. This is not a smart cat. It's what? Oh, so then Avi says, well, even if you took a radically literal read about seeing, look, I may not,
But you know that there's going to be that person who comes for the Yom Tov meal. You know, this is Pesach we're talking about. Pesach is a time for family. And everybody has that cousin in the family who, when you tell them that that's haunted by a ghost, that they're going to be the person to discover whether that is true or not. Avi already has in mind which cousin it is who's going to be the person who's going to search right,
so
in his house.
Be more exact inside the house, but inside the character, I just don't see it.
Oh, don't have company. Good, good solution. Okay, bye. Okay, but all joking aside, right, what all these point out is that if you took seeing very seriously, right, then depending on exactly what you meant seeing meant, right, the problem would be simply to make sure the chametz is not seen, right? Right now, whether that means I don't look, or whether that means I make sure that any place I might look, or my weird cousin might look, or whatever, right? But realistically, if you took the word lo yira'ah seriously, and you thought that that framed the prohibition, then the solution we would look for is to make sure that that, right, the level of seeing or being seen that would make me violate the prohibition, I have to make sure that that doesn't happen on Pesach. Yes? Right? So that's the type of question I want you to ask. Is in this pasuk, right, what is it that I could do to make sure that the chametz isn't there? So now, what all of you have just said is, now again, are we going to accept all of your formulations on seeing? No. No. But what are you all saying? Let's, if you took all of what you said more seriously and formally and said, okay, what are you telling me about the nature of whatever this issue is about chametz? What are you telling me is its nature?
Is it either that the chametz can't be in a position that it would be seen, or is it that we can't see the chametz?
Very good. No. Wait, what I want to read off here. No, is it right? Avi, as the more simple formulation, is both of what Mordechai just said, right, come down to Avi's point, is that all these formulations, in very different degrees, come down to the fact that lo yira'ah lecha chametz is fundamentally a halacha that is about how you, the person, the gavra, relate to the chametz, right? If you take lo yira'ah seriously, right, then this prohibition of owning chametz is, or whatever you call it, seeing chametz, owning, relating, affiliating, associating, whatever, right, is about how you relate to it, right? Sure, the extreme literalist view that Eitan said is don't see it, so pretend you don't have object permanence, and it'll all be fine, right? The more demanding versions that you actually have to search and make sure it's not where you normally go, fine. But the point is that what you're saying is that the prohibition is oriented towards the person, right? Not the chametz, but the person, right? The gavra, not the chetza, right, of the chametz, yes? Okay, good. What's another way of making sure that chametz isn't around? Let's say there is chametz. Now what do you do with it? So let's say you burn chametz. One second. Let's say you burn it, or let's say you make it inedible. What type of solution is that? That's a solution that focuses on the chetza. Very good? Right? You understand? Right? Meaning, one way of, right? So, this is what I wanted to get at, is that there are two very different ways of dealing with your problematic association with chametz. One is to sever the problematic association, right? Is to sever the problematic association. I'm being vague on purpose. So if the problematic association, as we said before, was to see it, then to sever the problematic association would be to ensure you don't see it, right? The other is to... is to get rid of the problem, is to get rid of the chametz. Yes?
No, meaning if the Chefta doesn't exist, then the Gavra cannot relate to it. Right? Meaning saying that you have to deal with the Chefta is a higher standard than dealing with the Gavra. Right? You understand? Right?
Well,
meaning...
Well, that could just be Gavra plus.
It could be. It could be. That could be, and we'll see middle models. Now, tell me what word... Tell me... I'm going to return to someone, but I'm not going to tell him I'm returning to him. I'm going to let him suggest. Oh! He has figured it out. Okay, which word in this pasuk might highlight the difference between the emphasis in the psukim? Oh, the lecha. Why lecha? Well, you tell me. Let's spell it out now. In the pasuk of lo yimatz, right, the chametz shall not be found.
That...
Right?
Lecha is not mentioned.
Lecha is not mentioned. Very good. Right? It's very good. It's very passive. Right? It's chametz shall not be found. The focus of the pasuk is...
On the chametz itself.
Is on the chametz itself. So if you were reading that pasuk and you said, what is the most likely way to solve your problematic association in a pasuk, which is formulated as lo yimatzeh, it shall not be found. Not seen. It shall not be found. Yeah. Right? The best way would be to make sure that it is not found. And how would you make it not found? By not having an it. Very eloquent there. By not having an it. Now, we heard different formulations. How might you get rid of an it? Thank you. So Mo said you get rid of an it by making it inedible. Because what does he think it means?
It is chametz.
It is chametz. And chametz is?
Food.
Is food, thank you. Is edible, is food. Is the other possibility someone said was that it was Eitan?
Yeah.
Destroy. Burn. Right? Very traumatic day here today. Very traumatic day today in Israel. Burn it, right? Is not just make it unfood, make it un. Okay,
yeah,
so...
Wait a second.
So, Kobe says, not so fast. Not so fast. It could be that even that first pasuk, there are hints of the fact that the issue isn't just about destroying the chefsa, but is gavra or gavra plus, as Mordechai says it, which is, it may not say lecha, but there is a possession there, which is bateichem. Okay, sure. Sure, point taken. But but Avi pushes back and says, look, you can't, unless you really think that your job before Pesach is to find all the chametz in the world, right? Is we have, you know, horrible, you know, we start new, you know, anti-Semitic tropes, you know, Erev Pesach. No, God forbid, we don't hurt people. We don't hurt babies. But if we see a bakery, Gewalt, you know what we're going to do to a bakery, right? Right? The croissants have no hope of our Pesach. Not just our croissants, but your croissants. I don't care how good they are, right? We will devour those things. Devour the croissants. Yeah, so, okay, sure. Unless you think we're, maniacal, bakery, I don't even know what the word is. What? Sure. Yes. Yes. So it could just be, yeah, look, you know, it's like Avodah Zarah. I don't even have to, in Chutz Laaretz, I don't even have to break into someone else's house to get out their Avodah Zarah. So I don't have to break into their house to get that evil croissant, you know? Like, you know, I mean...
It makes sense in context, Simon.
It makes sense, Simon. He's like, a croissant could never be evil. Fine, what is evil? What is evil? What? Because it's Pesach.
You're right.
It's a croissant. Paro and a croissant. You know? No, it is the devil personified in the croissant. Oh, that is like the Hamantaschen. I mean, you're like bringing together two villainous, Yes. Though as we all know, Hamindashin are objectively evil. They're objectively evil. But that is only if you know Yiddish. If you don't know Yiddish, then they're not. But if you understand what Hamindashin actually means, they are evil. No. The original Hamindashin in the original is limited to one and only flavor. And that is poppy seed, because it means Mondashin. Right? Mondashin means poppy seed cookie. Those are evil. They're just evil. They're just horrible. They are atrocious. All the other things we call Hamindashin are not evil, because they're not actually the original Mondashin. Poppy seeds are great on bagels. You know, do you understand the comedy if someone brought Hamindashin, like when they went to Dubai, and they end up in jail for the crime of bringing Hamindashin?
Right, poppy seeds.
Poppy,
right.
No, it's a criminal offense. Yeah. What? Oh my God. Yes. No, Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik is very insistent on this problem. You know, there's a famous, I've told you this before, right? There's a famous parody thing that happens sometimes before Pesach, before Purim or Hanukkah, called the Latka Hamindashin debate, which is, you know what a latka? A latka Hamindashin debate is a parody in which you have a debate teams where each team has to present arguments in favor of which is better, a latka or a Hamindashin. And they can be quite dramatic and exciting because people come up with the most absurd things. But at some point, many years ago, I was in a shiur by Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik where he said, obviously, the answer to that question is latkes are better because Hamindashin in the original are limited to Mondashin, which are poppy seed cookies, and there is no fouler experience in this world of thinking you are about to bite into a chocolate thing and then discovering that it is poppy seed. There is no fouler experience, right? It's horrible. It's just sure.
If you shake chocolate, that would be good.
See, that would be a great experience. If you expect poppy seed, and it turns out that it's beads of chocolate. That would be a different story. That would be... So if we make chocolate in that bead texture... I like the flavor on bagels. Why would you do that? Oh. Okay. Anyways, not the point. But in the latter pasuk, right? So in the latter pasuk, the point is that front and center is not the chametz itself, but is lecha, right? That the pasuk in which we talked about the theoretical possibility that it means literally don't see, which of course, are we going to accept that la lacha? No, we're not going to accept that. It's just I don't have object permanence on Pesach. We're not going to accept that, but. The fact that that's not a completely crazy read of the pasuk, even if not correct, shows you the fact that licha, the centrality of licha, highlights the fact that it's very much about your experience of relating to the chametz more than the object of the chametz. Now, obviously, you can have hybrids. Right, now, obviously you could have hybrids, right? My point is that there are two fundamental ways that I can ensure that you don't violate these prohibitions. And it may be the different prohibitions require different ones, right? One second. One is by destroying the object, whatever destroying, making inedible, a range of positions. The other is by severing the problematic connection, whatever that connection is, between me and the chametz. There are hybrids, right? Right, there are hybrids, right? Because you could say, listen, the problem is only if I own chametz of a sufficiently problematic nature, right? And therefore, right, it's some sort of hybrid, right? It's I need to do something to the chametz. I do need to transform the chefza, but not necessarily in a way that in a vacuum I would look at it as non-chametz, but that it is no longer chametz at the level that I, as a person, have to worry about it.
Right, and you don't need to care about the chametz of the potato, whereas you got
Correct, right? And maybe you'll say, well, it depends. Is it bivatechem? What if I, right? Maybe there's different levels that I can tolerate depending on if it's in my house or if it's in my property, right? There, there, so we could talk about Gavra Plus. We could talk about... Correct, right? And we could talk about all different types of hybrids as we go along. For sure. Why am I taking you on this half hour theoretical exercise, which we do whenever we begin a sukkim, just two sukkim. Why am I going on this theoretical exercise? You tell me. Because bittul is super important. And now if I tell you the following, that the Gemara, after almost four blot, no, after three blot, right, comes and says, listen, everything we've been talking about is rabbinic. Because biblically, you can just solve your problem with this thing called bittul.
I mean, we're just like a certain why you need a candle. And
we had sukkim for candles. We had sukkim for everything, right? What do you need to ask? What is the major? What is the major question you need to ask when you are trying to define the thing we have called bittul? What? Well, what? So first of all, what d'oraita is it solving?
Why didn't we bring this?
Right, right. Very good. What d'oraita is it solving? Right. Well, one second. Now, what d'oraita is it solving? And how is it solving it? And now, so now help me. Bittul, whatever this thing is, what should you expect the directions to be? One possibility is that bittul is somehow doing something to the cheftza, and therefore it is doing what? Making it less chametz, right? Right. We've just said that the potential solution to the lo yira, lo yimatzeh, all that conglomerate of Isurim, we said that one solution that we have found is doing something to the chametz. Destroy is a harsh word. Hold the thought. Hold the thought. Is to somehow transform the object of chametz in such a way that it is no longer a problematic object. Yes? Bittul could, one solution would be if you thought bittul did that. Yes? Very good. The second possibility is that bittul is severing the problematic connection between you and the chametz. Or if you wanted to put it differently, is it solving the problem of chametz, or is it solving the problem of lecha? Right? Of chametz or your chametz? Right? That is the million-dollar question in bittul. Is it solving the problem of chametz, or is it solving the problem of you having, relating to, associating with chametz? And this is why I spent half an hour with you testing the possibilities, because that is the question I needed to get you to get to. That is the conceptual question I need you to get to. Now, there's before we actually see the Rishonim, there's one more pasuk that I didn't put down, but should be in the back of your mind. And what other pasuk do you have to bring into conversation to understand this? We just did the pasukim Balirabai Matzei. What pasuk did I not give you? But I wanted to see if you would remember it. No, there's no pasuk of bittul. But what is there a pasuk? In addition to these pasukim, what pasuk should be echoing around in your mind? Kobe, what pasuk should be in your mind? Besides these negative, these prohibitions. Oh, very good. Kobe says, well, yeah, tashbitu. Wait a second. In addition to the fact that that there shouldn't be chametz and that I shouldn't have chametz, there's also an echiyuv, a mitzvah of tashbitu. You shall destroy, or we'll see what the word tashbitu means. So what is the last question you're going to have to figure out? Which is if you think that bittul works, not if bittul severs the connection between you and the chametz, does bittul have anything to do with tashbitu? No. Obviously not, right? Almost definitely not.
right? Or probably not, right? But wait. But if Bittul somehow, and we'll have to explain how, affects the chametz itself, right? Affects the chametz itself, then what?
Either Teshvitu is...
Then either what? So either that's because Bittul somehow, inexplicably, not just somehow transforms the chepsa in a way that is not problematic, but Bittul rises to the level of Tashbitu, right? And therefore, the reason that it makes it that you don't violate lo yirah, lo yirah lecha chametz, lo yimatzeh lecha, lo yimatzeh chametz, lo yimatzeh vadechem, is because it has risen to the level of destruction somehow, right? Or you could say that no, Bittul is, no. What's the middle position? Is it does somehow transform the chetza enough to solve the problem of Bal Yira Bal Yimatze, but it not enough to fulfill the mitzvah of Tashbitu if, as we talked about at the beginning of the year, you assume that Tashbitu is active. And remember we said it's not clear that Tashbitu is active.
In which case you could fill all of that.
Correct. And that's why I said it's probably not Tashbitu. Right. But if you, right, meaning to make Bittul Tashbitu, you need to do one of two things. You either need to have a very ambitious understanding of the strength of Tashbitu, of Bittul, or a not so ambitious interpretation of what it means to fulfill Tashbitu. Right? So again, right? So just to review, Bittul, first question you have to ask is it solving the problem of this being chametz somehow? Or is it solving the problem of you having chametz? Right? And it's about severing the connection you have to the chametz. The second question is if it in fact is somehow transforming the chametz, and that's how it's solving the problem, is it only solving the negative problem of l'ra'ay mazir chametz, right? It's sufficient to transform the chametz on that level, but maybe it's not sufficient to transform it at the level of the mitzvah aseh of destroying chametz of Tashbitu, or either because we have a very strong understanding of what Bittul is doing, or a not-so-strong understanding of Tashbitu, not only is it enough to avoid the negatives through some conceptualization of transforming the object, but it's strong enough to transform the object even for the positive mitzvah of Tashbitu. So, right?
What's the point of doing Bittul? Give it a destroyed anyway.
Well, that's going to be part of the problem. Yes, that. So that's the next step. It's based on how we answer it is, well, I'll change your question. Your point is, what's the point of doing?
Right, like at that middle option.
Very good. The better question is, to put it the opposite, is there a point to destroying chametz? Right? Meaning, one of the ramifications of our conversation by the end will be, once I do Bittul, why am I burning chametz at all? Is there any value to burning chametz?
Well, there is the active mitzvah of Tashbitu, right?
Sure, but what does Tashbitu mean?
Well, I guess if you say it means
it's sure. And remember, and someone tell me what machloket might have to be revisited. Remind me. Oh, I just said that, but in the Gemara, in the beginning of the second parak, remember what machloket might have to be revisited at the beginning of the second parak? What? Very good, thank you. The machloket Reuven and the Chachamim, whether Tashbitu requires burning or however you destroy it, right? Because burning, Bittul doesn't sound like burning, right? But is it obviously not hashpatato b'chol davar, destruction in any way? Well, it depends how we understand. Bittel. Depending on how we understand Bittel, it may be something.
No.
Why not? Wait. Shh, shh, shh.
Oh.
Boys, calm down.
What have I told you in the past? No, in general, what have I told you in the past? That if there is a conceptual possibility that emerges from the sugya, someone, no matter how radical that implication is, someone, somewhere, will say it. That is obviously it's a highly qualified yes to obvious question, which is, obvious question I will put differently, which is, if you take what I just said seriously and think that Bittel somehow transforms the Heftza into non-Chametz, I don't know how that works, but if that's what we're going to conclude, does that mean that I could eat Chametz on Pesach because it's not Chametz? Right, I can't eat Chametz, but does that mean I could take something that yesterday was called Chametz and now is called
leavened bread?
And now is called it's called yes, right? Because Hefter shouldn't do that. The answer to Avi's question is almost definitely not. And nevertheless, the Michtam quotes a position that says, yes, it does. It does in fact mean. So if you would like to know how far we're going to get in this sugya, the answer is that by the end of it, we will in fact realize that yes, if you follow these conceptual positives at the end, I told you by the end of the year that if you learn how to think carefully, you will predict every shita, even the really weird ones. So there you go, Avi. You have predicted, because yes, the Michtam, in fact, takes it down that very weird rabbit hole, and by the end says, aha! And once you've done Bittel, you could eat it! What? I'm glad that makes you happy, because in fact, the Michtam does it. And don't worry, because while that weird lumdish position exists to make Avi happy, the rest of the Rishonim, who basically say, that's
insane.
Insane. It was nicer than what was about to come out of my mouth. But yes, sure. The consensus view will, don't worry, will agree with Mordechai, which is no. Because obviously the answer is no. That doesn't mean someone didn't say it. But under that understanding, obviously you should expect someone to have said it. And yes, if someone could have said it, someone did say it. There is always that person. To be fair, that person is not frequently a position quoted in the Michtam. Something about the water in Provence, because sometimes it's a position in Miri, and sometimes in the Michtam, and sometimes some other person in Provence. I don't know what was going on in Provence, but in Provence, it's a good place to find positions like this. Look, you're jumping the gun, but, you know. But, look, it's the one thing I gave you from a screenshot, because I'm like, there's no way. I'm not going to retype it. No, you will see it in the original, or you will, you know. Now, admittedly, he also doesn't agree with it. He just quotes it and says, also, no, that's not true. So even he doesn't accept it, but he does find such a position, amazingly. Yes, he says it's like eating dirt, but we haven't gotten there yet. But yes, I don't want to rush to it. No, it is not.
Five carriage of flour. This is very much not.
Oh yeah, you know, I didn't say the Michtam held of it. So he quoted it and then said, this is very much not true. Okay. Fine. So, this is, by the way, what I wanted to do today, was basically to get you to this point. Did you guys do Rashi and Tosfos yet?
Yeah.
The Rashi? Try Tosfos.
What? You did. Okay. So, let me at least get you started on this. Set you up for tomorrow. Let's start backwards. Tosfos says, right, if you skip to the end of Tosfos, right, from Vomeri's answer. Sorry. Tosfos says, Vomeri, give me the oraita v'vitzel v'amasagi. Biblically, vitzel works. Why? Mitam. The me'achar shebitlo have a hefker v'yatsa merishuto. Because once bitl has happened, it has left your property. Umutar, and therefore it is permitted. Mitika amrinan avalata roa shel acherim shel gavoa. Because you are allowed to see chametz, which belongs to others and to God. Okay, so Tosfos' thesis throughout the sugya is that what is bittul? Hefker. It is making chametz ownerless. Okay, so on the models that we set up, clearly, what does Tosfos believe? Meaning, what mechanism? Is it changing the chametz or severing the connection? It's severing the connection, right? Tosfos is 100% clear that the key to his understanding is two letters. What are those two letters? Lamed and Achav. Lecha. Lecha. Very good. And what I want you to make sure to do tomorrow is to see the Gemara on Hey and Bet, right? Which is the Gemara he's quoting, right? To see where he gets this idea that the key solution is in the severing of the connection. He didn't make it up, right? The Gemara on Hey Amud Bet, the emphasis really does seem to be on the Licha. That seems to be the celebrated word. So I want you to see where Tosfos gets that. What's the problem with Tosfos, as he already notes? Is that if you think it's Hefker, Hefker has rules, right? Like, Hefker has to be done in front of three people, right? Things like that. And what's the problem? Bidika doesn't have the same rules. And therefore, one of the major questions we're going to have to answer for Tosfos and anyone who thinks it's Hefker is, if you think it's Hefker, then why does it seem to violate all rules that we know about Hefker? Okay? So what I want you to start with tomorrow is, right, is read Hay and understand why Tosfos is convinced that all Bidika has to be is Hefker and the severing of the Lecha. Okay? Then I want you to understand why Rashi does not say that. So if you go back to the beginning of Tosfos, right, Perish Bekuntris, he quotes Rashi, in case you didn't want to look at Rashi inside, but it's the same thing. Mi dechtiv tashbitu velo dechtiv tiva'aru alma shbata balevi. Rashi says that since the pasuk says tashbitu and doesn't say tiva'aru, it is balev. Those are very hard words to parse there. What is Rashi saying? What is clear from Rashi saying, just in a cursory read? Is it about... So is, first of all, is it about Lecha or about the Chametz? Rashi. Chametz, clearly. How do I know? Because remember I said, there's three questions, right? There's three... You could say it severs the connection. You could say it transforms the chametz. And if it transforms the chametz, it could either only transform the chametz enough to negate the negatives, right? Of lo yirah, right? And lo yimatzei. Or it can do it to the level of what? Of tashbitu. If it's tashbitu, are we clearly in the realm of chefza? 100%. Right? You are being mashbit chametz through bittel. Does Rashi think that bittel chametz suffices to check off the box of tashbitu? Yes. Why does he think that? And what did I say? There's two... One second. What did I just say? There are two ways to get to the conclusion that bittel chametz could solve tashbitu. How could you do that? Right? Remember, the assumption that we're walking in with is tashbitu is up here, right? And bittel is down here. Right? Tashbitu is a high standard, bittel is a low standard. Right? Right? If you think that one fulfills it, there are two ways of doing that, which is either lowering tashbitu or raising bittel. Which one does Rashi do? Lowers tashbitu. Very good. Rashi is 100% explicit. He says the reason that bittel is enough is not because bittel is super strong, but because it tashbitu isn't the same as tivaru. So tomorrow, what I want you to do, tomorrow here's your jobs. Okay, we're gonna stop here. Tomorrow, your job is to start getting the conversation rolling. Tosfot tells you that the key to his position is on Hayom Bet, right? Which is the Gemara I gave you on Hayom Bet. And like I said, if you want. And you want to look at the English on that Gemara, I sent it out, but you know how to find it in case that Gemara challenges you, right? Understand where Tosfot is based on, but then realize that the major question we have to answer for Tosfot is not, how does he explain our sukkah? Tosfot is actually pretty easy from a Psachim perspective. The problem with Tosfot's position is, right, which is why, if it's Hefker, I understand, it solves the problem of Lacha, but why does it break all rules of Hefker? Rashi clearly thinks it's the Cheftza, not just the Cheftza for Lo Yirah Yimatzei, but the Cheftza even to the level of Tashbitu. Try to understand what Rashi is getting at, right? And try, if you can, at least to get through the Gemara in Psachim. But honestly, ideally, if you could get through The more of these Gemaras you could get through, the better. The most challenging source, admittedly, of this whole thing is going to be the basically merciless Ramban that I gave you. As you can see, that's number 10. That first I was very nice, and then I gave you the Ramban. The Ramban, that is a merciless sugya, but I did give you summaries in English at the end of some of these hard to cut out. So I did do that for you, but that is really where things are going to start to get difficult. What?
To keep 50 minutes.
Yes. Is that a problem?
But you understand how now you understand how every sheet does fit in. As long as you understand the psukim really well, you will see how everything fits in.